want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Brilliant and meter class. Welcome to the Three Man Weave podcast with me, Meatman Shane Cahill, taking over from all three men in the Three Man Weave as the lads have all phoned in sickened. Galway, Clare and Cavan all exited the championship, but meither into the Super 8s and meither class. So I'll be devoting the full hour to Meath being brilliant. I'll have top five Meath performances. I'll have Donald Keoghan, man or god. I'll be talking flat out about Meath for ages and ages and ages. It'll be non-stop, continuous Meath. Mick, I'm doing the podcast. I'm taking over the podcast this week. Yous are going to make this whole thing about Cavan, like yous do every week. It's about me this week. Lads,
come on out.
This is my big...
Get out, Shane.
Ah, go away, lads.
Enough of this.
Come on, this is... You don't belong in here. This better be all about Meath.
Jesus, I hate Meath. Oh... Is anything worse than getting knocked out? If, do you know what? It's worse than Meath getting through than Cavan getting knocked out. I'd rather none of us got to the Super 8s. I'd rather they got rid of them see me than it.
None of us did get to the Super 8s. after our weekend, that's all Galway, Clare and Cavan all lose.
That's the last bit of enthusiasm you're going to get on this show this week, lads.
Hello, welcome to Three Man Weave, the Boz at EGA podcast. There'll be no more Meath chat this
no
week.
More fun and happiness. I know there probably will be a bit of Meath chat, to be fair. Yeah,
and maybe a little bit of fun.
Morris here with Mick and Mark as usual. Lads, how are we doing?
Sure, all right.
Things are, you know. Sure, some weeks, some years, you just got to say, I'm a GAA fan and I'm just going to look forward to the rest of the season.
Most years.
We've got the Super 8s, we've got the quarterfinals, the hurling. You know, what's there not to look forward to? Just that none of us will have any interest in it. You're a Kerry man now these days, I suppose.
Yeah,
are you?
And this podcast, I mean, if there's one thing we love in here, it's a bandwagon. And we started the Brendan bandwagon long ago.
Yeah,
and sure enough.
To be fair, like the people of Cavan had the leash flags out this last month. Everywhere I drove around, it was just a sea of blue and white. We're getting aboard.
We'll start there. About 2 months ago on this podcast, we interviewed Eddie Brennan and asked the question, what would he have to do to become into the conversation to be the next Kilkenny boss?
Yeah, we didn't ask Eddie this now. This
no,
was our own
this
conversation.
This is our own debate. Yeah. And he's probably done enough at this stage.
But I think at the time you kind of said, look, they'd have to, we were kind of dismissing it as what he could do at Leash could outpace what somebody like Henry or someone can do within Kilkenny. That there's probably more, you know,
Scope,
weight, you know, put on what happens in the club championship in Kilkenny than what's going to happen in Wexford. And we kind of agreed that to even get into the conversation, what he'd have to do is win the John McDonagh and then win the preliminary. And winning the preliminary quarterfinal was the kind of add-on that made it a nonsense of a conversation, really, you know? Until a couple of months later.
Come Sunday. I actually, like, sometimes that conversation can kind of irritate me slightly. Like, you know the conversation about Wexford win and all the focus is on Davey, or Leash win and all the focus is on Eddie, but in this context I think it is worth bearing in mind that this is a team that very very narrowly avoided a relegation playoff in the John McDonagh Cup last year. When Eddie Brennan took over this job, 22 different players that they originally approached didn't come on to their panel. He also had the internal political chaos that resulted of the county final where his own captain decided to walk off the panel because of what was a pretty shocking incident there, and Ross King duly came back. I think he managed that expertly, got Ross King back after initially going travelling, and sure enough he scores a goal in John McDonagh final and has a stormer against Dublin as well. On top of that then, he brings in Niall Corcoran, who's a former Dublin hurler obviously, as a coach. He spoke to us, Mick, at the time about why he did that, that their philosophies were aligned, and he gets somebody like David Moriarty. All this talk that we had about Limerick's strength and condition over the last couple of years, and he goes and gets Limerick's former strength and condition coach and brings him on board as well. Like, in terms of doing what he does well, but also managing to delegate elsewhere, I think what Brennan's done is kind of remarkable, really.
Yeah. It's been a great job. I think Eddie was in here in the studio last, I think it was October.
Yeah.
Just after he took the job. And I was talking to him about going to Laois County Championship matches and everything. And anyway, he was very calm. He obviously wasn't telling me any secrets or anything like that, but he was just... I loved how open and calm he was about the situation. He told us about the job he had ahead. This was all just chat. This wasn't on air or anything like that. He told us about the job he got ahead. He told us what the challenges were. But he didn't seem in any way daunted by them. He sort of said, look, some lads aren't interested in playing. I'll talk to them and hopefully, you know, they'll probably come back. You know, if they, sure, look, I suppose I could probably get them back. And, you know, there's a good group of hurlers there. And he'd been watching matches for a few weeks and he could tell that the standard was better than what they'd shown. And that was just his attitude all along. And it kind of goes back to, sometimes I always bring these things back to an attitude of a manager that goes back to Giovanni Trapattoni, for strangely enough, and on to Martin O'Neill straight away, which was like, if you keep telling players they're not good enough, they're not going to be good enough. You know, and it's like, it's a huge, that is your leader. That's the person that's sending you out to be the person you are. Eddie Brennan consistently telling Laois they're absolutely good enough to win this. I mean, he told us that before the John McDonagh started, that you know, their aim was to go and win it. And why not? Like, you know, and Laois have had good players for a long time. Don't forget that they weren't that far off. Like only 4 or 5 years ago under Cheddar. You know, the fall off was a bit weird and silly, really. It shouldn't be happening for a county like that anymore. But he's brought them back to that level. And the scenes yesterday were so, so, so good and so important for hurling, I think. Because if you just look at the final whistle and you look at people on the pitch, like the manager, look at Eddie, like look going absolutely crazy. The players on the pitch. And then I think the most important thing is like supporters, like, bawling, crying, hugging strangers beside them. You know, they can't believe that they've seen this. It was just such emotion that you just don't see outside of All-Ireland finals really anymore, you know.
I can't offer much in the way of hurling analysis, but what I can analyse is celebration scenes. And if you look back at that, it's incredible. Like Eddie Brennan, you talk about lads, you know, GA people having a great pair of hands in them. He must have brought in about six people into a hug.
It's a bear
like
hug,
he just kept getting more and more people coming in. And Mark Kavanagh, there wasn't enough room for Mark Kavanagh to get fully into the hug, so he just put an arm in the hug and then started, so there was almost like a mall of people hugging, and Kavanagh started moving them along the sideline. He just started dragging the whole lot with that arm. Yeah. And then Brennan took off onto the field, and the RTE radio reporter was chasing after him. He briefly paused just before he broke into the middle of the field, Brennan, for just one fist pump to the camera, to the photographer that was taking photos. And then off he went to meet with the rest of the players.
Yeah.
And then you had all the different types of Laois. You had Laois, like, people young and old. You had lads, you know, there were two, they were gone past the era of wearing a jersey, so they just had their light blue polo t-shirts. Then you had the younger lads in the combat shorts and white shoes, adequately dressed for the day, donning in their Laois jerseys. It was brilliant. It's only, what was it, a minute and 30 seconds long, but it's well worth checking out.
There is another standard of GA person as well, who's beyond wearing a jersey, but they're out for the day. And that is the person who will wear the nice shirt, possibly tucked into the jeans, with a belt, shoes, and then just one of those kind of little headbands of the county colours just around the neck, just to show who they are.
Or around a hat, because they're going to be wearing a sun hat. It was very bright yesterday.
Eddie Brennan, Don Morris, must be one of the most interesting hurling characters of all time in terms of just his consistent relevance.
Like, your work.
I was there in 2002 when he scored the goal in the All-Ireland final for Kilkenny in the first few minutes, you know, and he like consistently was always, you know, this goal threat, known as this kind of goal scoring player. Kind of was falling off a little bit around the five in a row kind of time. Didn't have a good year in 2010. Brought back in 2011, wing forward, and like had that moment of the game to win the All-Ireland where he sets up Richie Hogan. He's not just a kind of a poacher at that stage, you know. Goes into is one of the better analysts, and especially over time, I think people were a little bit unsure of him at the start, and kind of he settled into it and people kind of got to like him, and then he goes off and jumps straight into management and does this in his first year. I think it's funny, like it's almost the story of 21st century hurling has been Eddie Brennan almost as much as any other one individual.
Yeah, his continued transition. And on that, right, the thing that I appreciate most about Eddie Brennan, this is very self-indulgent, but it's just a point that something that I think really stands to him, is he's such a welcome dose of sense with so much guff going around the game right now. But like we spoke about it already, the fact that he lets his players celebrate last Sunday and even have a few on Monday, and the way he handled that transition after John McDonagh, the thing about social media, like still being willing to have a bit of crack and be open like he's not treating this as the most important thing in the world. He's still tipping away with the punditry and all that stuff as well. Like it's the obviously the scenes being willing to openly celebrate after the games. He's just such a welcome dose of sense that I can't really praise him enough for that. And I'm so glad to see that, you know, so many times you see teams who implement like media bans or drink bans or whatever, and some that's used as a reason for success and not yeah. and the fact that he kind of defies that, and it's that those things don't really have as big an influence as people make out to be, so yeah. they shouldn't be treated as seriously as they are.
It's generally looked at as the as a way to close the gap. That's just the complete wrong
yeah,
idea
exactly.
as in like that's not the reason you're not as good as Kilkenny is because they drink less than you. It's nothing to do with it, you know. I have to say, like, we should talk about some of the players as well, some of them that have been there for a long time, like Ross King as you mentioned already, but like good players that have, like, me and Mark were talking about this morning, that the word warrior was a big one we use for Conal Keeney, but the word that's always used for these guys who've been through the bad times and get to the good times is soldier, you know. And there's a good few soldiers on that Leash team, and you know, and like, what a brilliant day for them. Like, a lot of people talk about how it was the best day ever day in a Leash jersey and stuff like that. That's just brilliant when you've been kind of knocking on the door for so long but not getting there, you know.
And even like I hate this cliche, right? But you know, this idea of like, oh, they wanted it more. Like, I think if you watch the Leash goal back, it's really, really hard to boil it down to anything other than how badly they want. Like, the ball was going out over the end line. Sean Warren was there to sweep up, didn't really want to intercept the ball, was happy enough to let it sweep across. Dunphy, the work really put in to get across and get up that ball. That was a ball played in by Ryan Mullany, so it was like trying to avoid a sweep, so he played into the side. But it's like just incredible work rate to get that ball back. Not only to get the ball back, but to actually work a chance to come back in along that end line and swing the ball back across, like, for Dunphy. And then you see the how much they celebrate that goal as well. I love to see that, like, the lift it gives. Not only, we'll talk about Galway Mayo later as well, but one thing that was really apparent was the lift the players got after things that happened in the crowd. So like that goal went in, the whole Leash crowd exploded. That kind of gave a wave for the rest of Leash players. You could see like Leash players dropped their knees with their hands above their heads at that moment. If there ever was a moment where you're saying, yeah, this might actually happen, it was probably then.
It's an interesting place for Dublin now as well. Like, it's kind of, it really is all the good work of this year and the three good performances with one win and one draw, one loss, all kind of undermined, really, you would think. And then where it leaves them, I don't know. I don't think yesterday was their story so much as Leash's anyway, but I think yeah. it is something that needs to be looked at in the next few weeks. I think, look, it's fine, and Matty Kenny will have another chance. You wonder, is it the last we'll see of Keeney? But in general, it is a younger team, and there's lots to kind of build on from them. Really struggled, though. They scored 3 points from play in the second half yesterday. They had a lot of frees. Like, there was a lot of frees in the game in general. A lot of scorable frees. But that would really worry me that they got, I think Keane Boland got 2 and Sutcliffe got 1. And that was all they got in the entire second half when they were chasing a game. So, you know, at the end of the day, though, they had a shot. They had a shot at goal to equalise that obviously was knocked over. But, you know, it's disappointing really for them. Like,
from that very high to a pretty incredible low. In the other Premier League quarterfinal, Cork won on a scoreline of, wait for it, 140 to 20 points, which is just, that's obviously A, that's a championship record. B, it's just such a kick in the stones for Westmeath, who I think have had you could classify it as being a good year. I mean, in terms of their league and getting to a jump to a final, but then following that disappointment, it was always going to be charred to rouse himself for this weekend. But it does show, I think it is still worth bearing in mind that at least it is great and they're coming on the crest of a wave, and it's really good to see that. But there is still a problem with this structure that, like, whatever happens on this weekend, we still can't have that. There's only a week turnaround for Dunlop teams next year.
Even for teams that aren't, like, I don't know how Leash managed, actually. That was almost the biggest feat we've ever been overcoming, supposedly superior team. It's having the energy levels to keep going for that long, 6 days removed from a massive final.
Like, yeah.
That's always what defied belief. And for Westmeath, you know, they were battling both the physical aspect of it and also the mental aspect, yeah. where they've,
which is probably bigger,
yeah,
in a game
trying
like that,
to get back
yeah.
up. Which I don't know. Like, are they ever going to, like, not necessarily Westmeath, but just whoever loses that Joe McDonagh Cup final? I know it's a carrot that's meant to be there at the end of the season or whatever, but like, they're probably always going to be beaten.
It helped though that Leash won. I think that's actually changed the concept of this whole thing. I kind of thought it was a waste of time. I thought it's, and it was lip service. Not that it was. It's not that I thought it was lip service, and now it's not. It absolutely was. It was an excuse to get them out of the championship. But Leash winning has changed everything for that now. And like, I think Carlo will look at that next year and say we could absolutely take on. Who might it be? Like, you know, it could be a Clare or a Wexford or a Dublin. Look at
it. Yeah, Carlo will be looking at Dublin if they win it. Like, yeah, if you lose it, it's just so hard turn it around in six days' time when what you really wanted was to actually win the Joe McDonagh Cup. I don't know if too many people are worried about getting into the quarter final proper or whatever.
Yeah. Once you've lost the Joe McDonagh,
Just one more point, just on Westmeath and the hurling structure in general, is that you have Leash now. Will be Division 1 next year in the Leinster Championship, obviously playing Tipperary in the quarterfinal. Carlow are still Division 1, even though they're back to the John McDonagh. Westmeath, for the first time, are in Division 1. I know the league isn't what it was, and you know there's a chance that these teams get relegated. Of course there is, but we will have like three traditional lower-tier teams all playing regularly against the top teams next year, and Leash will obviously do it in the Championship as well. And, you know, the two teams will have quarterfinals against somebody. You know, like, there is a little bit more, you know, I still, for all of the talk about John McDonagh not getting the respect it deserves and stuff like that, I don't think exactly anybody paid attention to the old Leinster round robin either, or these early qualifier matches, you know. And I think there is a lot more been done to bring these teams up to that level and playing them. And even if it's imperfect, and even if we talked to Paul Cody about, like, you know, what Carlo are missing out by this happening to it, it's still better than what they used to have before.
Yeah.
And I think that should actually be acknowledged.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just lastly on this as well, I want to just wish goodbye to the first of the three different types of quarterfinals we have in the GAA. We're the only sport in the world where quarterfinals don't necessarily mean quarterfinals. You've got three sets of quarterfinals in the GAA. In most sports, it's four teams, you know, eight teams, four v four. One match played.
You
off,
might have two legs.
The semi-finals. Yeah, it could be possibly two legs. In the GAA, your first quarterfinals are the preliminary quarterfinals, where only four teams take part in total. That is to, obviously, two winners come out of that to book a place in the actual quarterfinals. But surprise, surprise, there aren't eight teams in that either. There's only four in those, with two teams coming out of that to go into the semi-finals.
But tell me about the football quarterfinals. They make way more sense.
Make far more sense. So your quarterfinals there is, they're actually called extended quarterfinals, where there's eight teams, but they're in two groups of four, and they play three matches each in those quarterfinals. So I don't know. We're going to have to
Change someday, the wording, I think.
Someday, yeah. It's like the leagues. You can't have a league in the GAA without a final in it either. You can't be just win a league by being top of the table. You have to be somehow beaten in some random final by a team that finished seventh or something after five playoffs. Sorry. Go on.
We'll move on.
A bit of bitterness
about,
there.
Yeah. We'll move on and talk about football next.
But we like to think it's Monaghan, but it's really me.
Yeah.
Like, we hate me.
The one part of being a dub that stayed with me has been a general kind of
hatred of me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we hate me. And, like, my grandmother, who's 99 this year, absolutely despises me. No, the way I hate me, you know, that team that you would have hated in the 90s. Like, we hate me. Like, one of the reasons we hate me was hair and everything else flying.
Why do you hate me?
Like, we hate me. People at Kells line the streets to welcome us back. We're throwing stones at the car. Throwing the stones at the car. Why do you hate me? We can hate me, but we can respect me. Like, we hate me.
We hate me.
Right, lads, we can't avoid it any longer. Galway Mayo, Galway Rouse. I was at this. But before we talk about the post-mortem and all that, this has been a podcast where we harp back to managers and players we've championed all year. And in that team, Mark, Peter Cook. Peter Cook has been... We've been fans of Peter Cook in this show and also in this office for about 2 years now, and he finally came good at the weekend. What a game.
Yeah, I invented him.
We're starting with a Galway positive, seemingly.
The league final last year, I thought he was the shining light for Galway against Dublin. He was just so busy. He was everywhere. He was a pest, really. And he was playing midfield that day. Now, obviously, he's kind of been pushed forward a little bit more into the forward line.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, in the first half, he only took the battle to Mayo on his
single-handedly,
own.
Single-handedly, yeah.
Yeah, some brilliant scores.
And, like, the reason that I actually want to start with him is I think he is indicative of so much of what is wrong with Galway right now. Because, like, so he kicked four outrageous scores, and I had a huge amount of influence. But there was 2 points in the first half, which goes to show the, like, what is so striking about when you watch Galway, especially being there on Saturday, is just their lack of imagination is absolutely incredible. I'm talking about from kickouts, there seems to be no real strategy, just how stationary are there. When they actually move the ball forward and attack, their lack of kind of some sort of creativity is just so striking. And the two moments for me that illustrated it perfectly was both in the first half, both balls into Farragher. And both times, the first one was the ball went wide, it was a long kick forward, Farragher turned, eventually tried to swing around his right foot, was kind of half blocked and kicked it wide. The second one was a hand pass, he tried to hand pass it to Cook, but Cook had to turn, double back and catch the ball behind him, and the chance was gone. But if you watch the run, I don't know if this came across on TV, if you watch the run that Cook made both those times, like, he made nearly an 80 metre sprint, absolute sprint, perfectly timed into space. Like, the first one, so, you know, a goal chance, oftentimes you think of a goal chance, or the keeper saved it, or somebody's put it wide. The first one is an incredible goal chance. He's flying through the forward, and nobody can stick with him. Like, the amount of ground he covered there, and Farragher doesn't spot him, tries to go for a shot, the ball goes wide, that's the chance gone. Second one, same thing again. He's flying through the middle, and he times his run perfectly. And, you know, when Mayo do those runs, it's so striking that anytime they make that run, like a deep lying run onto the ball, he gets the ball. So think about... was it Cone's score in the second half when he's flying off the shoulder, the ball pops. It looks instantaneous, but it's all strategic. Like, this is stuff that is planned, running at angles, support lines. The problem with Galway is that it happens in isolation way too often. And I think Cook, if anyone is, he's the victim of it, but it's also indicative of the lack of strategy that he was there. Like, he was literally there. He did all the hard work, and all it would take was some bit of imagination or heads up to give him the ball, and it doesn't happen.
Football, yeah.
And it doesn't happen. And I think that is the biggest single failing of Galway. And it applies across the board, actually. Their movement from kickouts, like, Mayo's strategy is really, really basic. But at least they have some sort of strategy. You know, this every player bunching on their own 45. They've got five players and then they break in all different directions. Like, Galway have none of that. It's their strategy is Power tries to kick it out quickly. If the quick kickout isn't on, he'll tip it to a cornerback, get it back, and they'll slowly build up, slowly allowing Mayo at their ease to drift back. And it does no benefit to anybody. And that is continually the issue with this Galway team. And it's the greatest single failing. It's what, like, we can talk about it later, about the reasons that there's so much kind of discontent around this team. But their greatest single failing is that total lack of imagination, really.
Yeah, it's funny, though. I think Galway can be nearly more positive coming out of that game on Saturday night than if they'd gone fully defensive and somehow managed to just scrape through. I know that sounds ridiculous because you want to get into the Super 8s or whatever, but you could see the glimpses of what we're all talking about. Like, don't let these players play. Like,
they are confused too, though.
It's only
glimpses, but when they kind of pushed up in the second half and got about Mayo, I know maybe it's also Mayo were kind of tiring a little bit or whatever, but thinking back, but like, when Galway actually put on that press, you could see this is a team that has the Cook, perfect example. There's so many other ones. Like, you know, no one ever mentions Cook because you have to go through the list of Ian Burke,
Daly, Walsh,
Brannigan, all these before you get down to it. Like, there's so many talented footballers. The one where he is, you probably have, is the, if they're all like that, you know, they're probably going home now, going to play with their clubs for the next 4 or 5 months, where they're a star player and trying to do everything on their own nearly. That you have to, like you're saying, develop some sort of system around them. Not only that it's more attacking compared to what it has been for the last couple of years, but also, it's not just attacking, like, Galacticos, go off and do what you want and the ball get over there. You can't, like, total football is really about strategy rather than about individual skill a lot of the time.
Yeah, and Mick, I suppose this goes back to your constant point about this Galway team.
It's the strongest opinion I have in all of Gaelic football, yeah.
But for me, what happened on Saturday was Galway fell between two stools. Mm. So they recognised their limitations between their defence structure, but they had no sort of way of trying to marry that with any sort of attacking game plan, the way a team like Donegal, I think Donegal are the best example of how Galway could play. Like, they probably drift back the same side of way, but when they break, there's a strategy there. There's a very clear strategy there. And they also managed to keep their best players forward. And Mayo, that's the most frustrating thing about watching Galway. This, you see, at one stage, Brannigan was marking Killian O'Connor. But like, James Carr's goal I thought the Brannigan tackle for that goal was really, really poor in that scenario, right? But, and Mark, I'll ask you this first. When you look at, you've seen Aidan Brannigan, who's only broken into this Kevin Walsh team, he's coming under him, so you wouldn't have known him as a minor or under 21. You would have just seen him as a guy player. To you, when you look at him, what kind of player is he? Like, what? How would you classify him?
Initially, he broke on, he was like an old-style corner forward, nearly. You know, he's like a wiry, sort of, like Conlon, nearly, for me, the type player. Yeah. Like, really skillful. Going to be able to kick points from tight angles near the end line, probably off both feet, that kind of thing, rather than a flyer, as you
industrious
call them, up and
down. So if, and that's totally true, like he is well capable of shooting the lights out. He's done it. I've seen him, I've played with him. He's well capable of shooting the lights out. He's that kind of player. Like, he could be an Ian Burke, he could be that kind of inside forward, and instead he's using this industrial role. And so, like, it's an error, it's a bad tackle for the goal, but it's the exact same tackle would have happened if Killian O'Connor was back trying to make that tackle on Shane Walsh in the second half. The problem isn't the tackle in itself. The problem is that there's a system where there's an expectation on a player like Aidan Brannigan to mark somebody like Killian O'Connor. At one stage, I was looking right in front of me and he's marking Killian O'Connor, and it's so backwards that is where we've gone to. That Killian McDade was, for a long part of the game, was playing in midfield. Like, that's not, you should craft him to the best that you have there. And I'm not trying to assign, I think I hate this thing where it's like, it's always, you know, it's black or white. It's either all the players' fault or all the manager's fault. Like, there's players who've, I think, have really, really underperformed. Like, it's not Kevin Walsh's fault that Owen Kernan lunges into a tackle on the end line when Killian O'Connor's going nowhere and makes like a blatant foul. That's not his fault. But there's an overarching thing that's a way bigger problem, that the Discovery team were totally confused and have been kind of confused for about a year.
Do you not think, though, the confusion even, and I know I saw you talking about the change of goalkeeper late on not really being as big a factor as other people are making it, because the team would have known, and in fact everyone in Galway knew. But I think the bigger issue is, how come you don't have a settled goalkeeper?
Yeah.
And I think that they've done this now. They've changed the naming of the goalkeeper twice on the evening of the match for the last two games. And I think, and you can't tell me that didn't have an effect on... One, like, you know, there was obviously that really bad couple of moments. This, you know, the
30-second howler.
30 seconds, exactly, which it all went wrong. But even so, I just thought that nearly everything about him just seemed like he just wasn't confident, you know, and that he just had his belief was lacking a little bit. And I just wonder, does that come into, you know, just this little bit of confusion that's going on in general? And is there a decisive voice in there that's making decisions? And even if they're wrong, it's like, this is what we're going with, lads. This is why we're doing it. You're my guy for the summer. I don't get chopping and changing goalkeepers. It's bizarre.
Yeah. So my point on that, just to clarify that, my point was that I think whether Power was announced on Wednesday, or this isn't a criticism of him, but whether Power was announced on Wednesday or whether he was told a minute before the game was shown in that he was going to be playing in goals, he's liable to do that. Like, he was named to start against Tipperary in 2016, I think. Was that the quarterfinal? Like, Galway conceded three goals against Tipperary. 2016 or 2017. He was named to start against Tipperary, and the same, very similar thing happened. Like, he's all, my only point was that, in my view, the mistake wasn't naming Lavelle and starting Power. The mistake was starting Power, period.
Like, I was going to say, Lavelle does seem like he's the guy of the two.
But I 100% agree with you. You should trust in your goalkeeper. Like, Lavelle, I don't think Lavelle even had a dip, to be honest. He might have been... I don't think he was in poor form, but he wasn't in great form. And that seems to be enough of a reason to start chopping and changing all of a sudden. I also wonder, to what extent was the clamour for Power... people looking at Cara Finn, a club team doing really well, and thinking, oh, well, surely you should play your Cara Finn players. And I don't know, that's speculation as well, I suppose.
But it goes back to the goalkeeper point is one of a few. Like, I think there's also, like, maybe you're trying not to be defensive, but you're also at one stage chasing a game. And I think it was Cook that had a free, maybe like 55 metres out over the near sideline. Doesn't have anybody running for it, kicks it back to the goalkeeper. Booze, right, understandable. Sometimes you need to do that. Goalkeeper gives it back, I think, to him again, and it goes back to him again. And suddenly there's nearly like 30 seconds gone, and you're back at a worse position than you started, because I'm not suggesting you launch it into the box the way Clare ended up doing yesterday. Just kind of waste of that. That's not how you try and get a goal in the modern game. But it just seemed like they had no ideas as how to do it. And I thought that there was, I just thought that they looked at a loss a lot of times. Maybe when they just started playing, like they did some good things, right? You're talking about the press mark. I thought they did that very well. It was a generally good weekend for attacking press in general. Like Meade at times when they did it yesterday, it was almost unplayable for Clare, like the way, anyway, but we'll get to that again. But you know, Galway did that very well. There's plenty of things to take out of it positively, but I just think that they're a team that without an identity or without a winning identity, definitely at the moment. And I just, whatever about whether I'm wrong or about Walsh or whatever, or whether it's all down to the management, I think that they could just do with a fresh face and a new start at this stage. And if the players aren't up for it, then we'll find that out as well.
I would agree with all of that. We might as well talk about Mayo quickly.
I was going to say, we should probably mention them, like, you know, and they're fouling. No, sorry.
Well, they're fouling. This was started by Dublin, right?
It wasn't, it was started by Mayo, but anyway, Dublin perfected it.
The new dawn of cynical fouling isn't pulling a man down when he's through in goal. The new dawn is when he's breaking inside his own half and you don't pull him down, you don't stick your foot in, you just wrap him up with two hands. So it's a two-handed tackle, which is it's borderline even a booking, but it's probably not even a booking. It's just, and
it stops a counter-attack.
Every single time, like over and over again, to the extent where, and the best example was Cohen's one in the second half, where, I mean, he made no attempt to play the ball, but all he did was put two hands in, so it was, hold him up is a blatant free, but that's all it is.
But ironically, that one happened when Galway were really back in the game and were pushing on to, this back when there's enough time left for them to get a few points even to equalise. And Kine got a free out. He did it to Kine coming from a kick out. Kine got a free out, but then there was some schmazzle off the ball between him and Killian O'Connor where they both got booked. And the free then, I can't remember if the free was either changed to Galway or thrown up. Sorry, changed to Mayo or thrown up. But it ended up anyway with Mayo getting a score from it. And then Mayo got the next score again. Like the whole momentum from Galway was killed. And it was ironically from that it was the tactic that helped them not only stop in the Galway counterattack, but actually ended up resulting in the Mayo score.
Yeah. Final point to Mayo. I think Mayo are such a clever team actually. And I think it's really obvious across the broad things that they do. Like you see stuff that just looks like I started laughing hysterically when I saw Keith Higgins soldering the ball back along his own end line towards his own goal. I was like, where is he going?
That was so scary. You know? If you think a few mad things happened in yesterday's match that we'll get to, but that might have been the maddest thing that happened all weekend, actually.
But as a whole, I think that, like, I know I mentioned earlier the way that they attack at angles and running strength, but even really subtle stuff. Like, did you notice for Cara's goal, after the ball was kicked out over the end line, James Burke, the Mayo trainer, was sprinting out after the ball and had grabbed it and thrown it back in so he had a quick line ball, which eventually led to the ball being spilled by Power, but the line ball that was delivered into the square. But it all started by James Burke being honest on the sideline and sprinting out after the ball, getting it, thrown it back in, and that allowed them to take it quickly. Like, I think that was just clever, you know what I mean? The cynical stuff is, like, in a way it's wrong and it shouldn't happen. I think there has to be, eventually there's going to become a conversation about trying to,
like, can we just, and I interrupt you on that because I actually don't want to be unfair on Mayo here, and not just because the Mayo mafia will be after us, you know, but no, genuinely though, I think every team does it. I saw it, like, I must have saw it 40 times this weekend. That's just what happens now when a team, like, you'll notice the teams aren't even stopping from the free because they know what it's for. They just have a take it. They don't give out to the referee, they just take the free. Every team does it. Mayo are just better at it than everybody else.
Yeah.
And ultimately the GAA needs to fix it, and it needs to be a tackle count. It needs to be a foul count. You need to be getting a yellow card. I think on two, I'd accept three fouls. And then it just stops, you know.
Or just like rugby where, like, somebody, you know, a random person gets a yellow card for persistent fouling from the entire team.
From the team, yeah.
But like that, yeah, it's not Mayo by any stretch of imagination. It's more of a, it's almost, now this is going to, Mick's going to explode here when I say it, but it's almost, you're praising them in what they're doing because every team should be doing it.
Until you're stopped.
As in, not, sorry, I'm going to say every team should be doing it, as in, if you support that team and someone you have a lead built up or something, and someone let run the whole way up the field, and it's like, why didn't anyone foul him? Drag him down, do so. Jesus, lads, foul him out the field.
Every going to explode,
that conversation happens, I think, in every GAA team, regardless if it's football or hurling. It's just that, like we're saying, it's one of those things that it's up to the GAA to do it, and a lot of the time it's the teams aren't actually cute enough to do it. It's almost a criticism of them.
But it is solvable. Like, just the black card has got a lot of people criticising it. And I know, particularly after this weekend, what happened with Hart and Tyrone, and we'll talk about that later. But Sakara's second goal does not happen without a black card. Like, without it, Liam Silk is pulling him down and taking the yellow card. Yeah. If that happened in any other era, Liam Silk is pulling him down and taking the yellow card. Like, yeah. That does not happen without a black card. And you get one of the best goals of the summer is thanks to the black card. I think that's worth acknowledging as well.
So it can be fixed, but it needs the GAA to do it, and it also needs a bit of media support. It needs, like, so something looks innocuous and isn't dangerous and everything, but it's done for the betterment of the game. You need Kevin McStay or whoever's on commentary not to say, that's nothing in that, it doesn't, you, it's a terrible punishment for a man. I'm using him as an example. He's a random name off the top of my head.
I was about to bring him up as the one person who went in a big rant about it yesterday during the Meath Clare game, where he was like, something, the GAA are going to have to do something with this. You're going to see this. It's ruining the ends of all our games. They're going to have to look at it.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about the Meath and Clare game, in fact, that the referee didn't know what a black card was there, because Clare has, and we'll talk more details but briefly, because Morris won't let me talk about referees, so I'm just going to sneak it in here as it's come up. Two black card, the most obvious black card offences I've ever seen for Hartnett and for Jamie Malone, neither of them, both yellow cards. And in the second half, he gives Gordon Kelly a black card for what was clearly a yellow card offence, and nothing in the rule book could make that a black card offence. Absolutely nothing he did was black cardable. Yeah.
But it does actually...
Bananas! Like, it's how could I know that more than the referee?
But the thing with Kelly's one is an example of where I wanted to say a persistent fouling, or McStay, I think, might have suggested, or someone suggested that, like, it's a free straight in front of the goals if that's thrown out. But, like, it's so hard to decide what a cynical foul is, because there's two ways of looking at the Kelly one, where he was doing that two arms around trying to get back and kind of fell over and your man fell with him. But like,
but that's why there's the detail in the rule book.
It's a drag down. Yeah. But like, I know just from playing myself as a trainer, you do those tackles where it's like, I'm going to do this and take him down in such a way that it's not a black, like, you still know what you're at. I know by the letter of the law, it's not
and that's
a black
why
card.
That's why he did well. That's why he should have been yellow carded, as opposed to the two other boys earlier on who didn't do well and should have been black carded and got away with it. Now I'm talking that there's no bias in here. Now I'm talking about three lads from the same county.
We're down this rabbit hole, so I'm going to engage in it. One of the main problems for me is the instructions, like. There's a lot of people talking about Joe McQuillan after Saturday night, and some of it rightly, but Joe McQuillan was sold down the river by his linesman. He was absolutely sold down the river. So he got message in his word. You could see him holding up if you watch the game back, he's holding up his collar, talking to somebody, and then he goes back and books Ian Burke when he should have booked Anthony O'Lee for scrapping off the ball. He gives a yellow card to the wrong man, and everyone's like, oh, McQuillan, you're clueless. That's not his fault. He's been told that in his ear. That's not his fault. That's somebody who's told him that again. Same thing as well is, like, I was sitting directly above when Shane Walsh and Boyle got the two yellows, the comment, and I was like, oh, it's a cop-out, the most common thing in the referee. The linesman is standing closer than I am. Like, he's right there looking down at it. Yeah. And he can't tell him. Shane Walsh is doing everything he can not to engage, and he comes down and scraps. Like, Galway are 6 points down at that stage, or chasing a game. He's got there's no way he wants to get involved there. And that's not McQuillan's fault. They need better help. And in a situation like that, I have so much sympathy for him, because he can't keep an eye. There's so much stuff off the ball on Saturday, so much of it.
Yeah.
And he can't keep his eye on all of that.
You also think all the cards and stuff at the end and the slowing down the game, that's due to the teams doing that rather than anything he was doing wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think he had the greatest game in the world, but that kind of out of control stuff at the end wasn't his fault. Like, what's he meant to do? Not blow the whistle for it? I do wonder sometimes about the time. Can I actually, because I'm afraid you're going to move on here, and I don't feel like we've talked about Mayo. I just want to say one thing about them in particular, was that Mark kind of scoffed at me when I said that Killian O'Connor was their best forward on the show a couple of weeks ago. I just think they're such a different team with him there. And he just, I felt like
sliding
two sliding catches in, but like, that is just the ultimate full forward play. You can do it sliding or you can do it at a normal height. But if you're just coming out, catching the ball and laying it off to someone, and it was what Andy Moran, in fairness, was always brilliant at. But O'Connor has that, plus everything else in his game, plus the shooting. He's just phenomenal. And it's so good that he's back for football, actually, in general. But he's going to only get better, I think, over the next few weeks.
Yeah, but he scoffed. Well, I didn't scoff it yet. I was saying that it's just arguably, he was saying he's definitely the best forward by a distance. And it was more in that they have a lot of good forwards, is my point. It wasn't that.
I think O'Connor is their best ever forward.
He's about to, potentially overtake. Looks like he will do it against Gooch, Kerry. Yeah. Overtake, yeah. The Gooch, who's the highest scoring player in championship history.
He's about 28.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's like Robbie Keane to Niall Quinn. And yeah. Poor Gooch, I didn't mean to say that his things were just...
No, Niall Quinn's the next best Mayo for player. Yeah, yeah.
But...
I know, I'm only joking. But it was good to see him back.
Yeah, and also was, again, for just, industriousness as well. He just seems to be everywhere. For someone coming back in on their own... The first game, you talk about players who shouldn't be back, defending or whatever, you will see him back a lot, but he actually isn't missing tackles or whatever.
Yeah. Before we move off Galway, I'm going to use my 30-second whinge now. I'm going to use it on this game, actually.
3, 2, 1, go on.
Right, I don't like criticising supporters, and I know it's a long way to go, and I know it's expensive, but that's true for everybody, right? Why is it okay that we rightly... slagging Blackguard Kerry about not turning up, their fans not turning up until the semi-final, and then Galway, when they get to a semi-final, don't even turn up. At the weekend, it was pathetic. They were incredibly dwarfed. It was about 5-1 by Mayo fans, and last year the excuse was the hurlers got to an Ireland final. This year the hurlers went out really early. The stuff about style, why can Roscommon or when Donegal were in their lull, why can their fans stay loyal and turn up every single time, but Galway can't? I'm up, am I?
Yeah, I think you've made the point, though, I have to say. Yeah,
These fans are out there, right? You see them. The criticism online.
Complaining.
There's loads of Galway GAA fans because they're so loud online and they're happy to stick it into players and management. But why won't you turn up for games? And why is it? Why can, or Mark? Maybe you can answer this. Why can, even when Cavan were in the Doldrums, their fans will stay and still turn up? Roscommon, Mayo, they were like lunatics at the weekend. It's incredible the lift that it must give their team. After the biggest lift that Mayo got was the Galway miss penalty, because the roar that went up in the stand was incredible, and they seemed to feed off that as well. Why can those teams maintain a loyal and strong fan base, but the Galway footballers can't? I genuinely don't understand it. And it's okay if you don't want to turn up, but then you shouldn't hit out at the fact when you're labelled as being poor fans, because the fans who turn up are great, but as a whole they don't turn up, and therefore that's poor in my opinion.
Fair call else to do in Cavan.
I was afraid to say it. It took a Cavan man to say it.
Is it Broly said that? Was it Broly? Who was it was on about that Galway have got too much with arts and stuff?
Yeah. To be any good at
music.
I think that's only in the city, though, to be honest, isn't it? But can I add to your whinge without it being my 30-second whinge? It's a very, very brief thing. I think another thing that Saturday Night Show was the GA have to stop being afraid of sellouts. You have to stop being afraid of a few people not being able to go to a game, because that match should have been on in Roscommon, and you've seen the fact that 19,000 went to Limerick. Maybe another 10,000 would have went if it was close by, and that's grand. But wouldn't that have been a better spectacle? Plus more people would have been there, you know? Isn't that the way to do it? Rather than, let's just put it in the biggest venue we can possibly think of that people can get to, and, you know, everyone will be able to go, and nobody will.
Yeah,
people will go. If a game's going to sell out, people will get their tickets, you know?
Right. Mark, are you ready to...
Yeah, I don't know if I am. It's more shite about rules and referees and fed up talking about it.
You've only got 30 seconds anyway, so I'll count you in. 3, 2, 1, away you go.
There seems to be this kind of general acceptance that when players get around a player on the ball, that it's a ruck and it can go either way. It's a 50-50 thing. The ref could give a free to the man with the ball or a free against him. And it's not that shouldn't be. There's rules to sport. It shouldn't be just, sure, it's a cost toss of a kind. Gary Brennan got one given against him on Sunday where the players surrounded him. He dropped the ball. It was a free given against him. And they just went in the commentary, that's dead right by the referee. There was no foul from a Mead man there. It's but that doesn't mean it was a foul against Gary Brennan. Why is James Carr allowed to take a load of steps? We'll overlook the steps rule because it's a great goal. But then if someone gets into a huddle, if they're caught in a huddle, you get about a second and a half before a free is blown against you for over-carrying.
And they ignore you if it bounces the ball. It may as well never have happened, because that's not going to help the ref get out of this situation. Yeah. It's so true. Mine was going to be about Marty Morrissey, but I don't think it should be now after you called him out for that moment in the game, because that was definitely a key point in it for me. There was a few different Marty moments, but I think I'll do something else instead.
Okay.
Top of my head.
2-1, Mick.
I'm glad that all six games are on television next week. I think that is a sign. It allays my fears that the Tipperary and now Laois match won't be on, and that the Donegal Meath game wouldn't be on. However, I don't understand why the GAA is competing with itself. It's made this bed for itself with more fixtures in a tighter season, but they shouldn't be doing this. It's even within this stupid system, it's fixable by putting 3 games on Saturday at 3, 5, and 7, and 3 games on Sunday at 1, 3, and 5.
Or, yeah, jeez, you hit that bang on the money there. Right,
stupid. I'm sorry, but people are going to have to choose between GAA games twice on Sunday.
Yeah,
and what does that do to when we come in here and say, can you not just be a GAA fan? Why do you have to be a football fan or a hurling fan? How does that work when people are literally choosing? All right, I want to watch. I want to watch Kerry and Mayo, and I can't watch Tip and Laois, and the Laois thing being one of the best stories of the year.
Yeah, look it, Cavan. It was a big weekend. It said it was very excited. Obviously, yeah, look it. Because I feel like we've gone a good, it must be a good 10 minutes out of bringing up Cavan. Live music and people there on the floor. Yeah, look, I believe my phrase was, mark my words, Cavan will not be bet on Sunday. And then they were bet.
Cavan, Mark, you can't avoid it any longer, as much as you've tried to.
I think every segment's been introduced as we can't avoid it any longer, which shows you the mood in this
shows
room.
You how bad it. Yeah, it'll be, when we talk about me and Claire, it'll be
we
the
can't
same
avoid
thing.
That anymore. But we can avoid that for 5 minutes where we talk about Cavan.
I think we can avoid Cavan and
Tyrone. I want to talk about Tyrone.
Like, can we all just not agree that this game didn't happen? We'll just strike it from the record books. Tyrone beat Kildare to get to the Super 8s.
Cavan lost the Ulster final and went home.
All right, let me ask you a different question. Has this year been a good or a bad year for Cavan?
It's been good, but it has been good. Like, Mickey Graham probably wasn't envisaging this. And they have to kick on next year for it to be good. If you can't really tell it from this year, but we're going to have to basically all the things I said on Friday that I said were solved, we're going to have to solve them. Because on Friday I was saying, there's one thing you say for sure, that we're going to go out and we're going to be hopping off walls and all this. And I don't know, Mickey Graham spoke afterwards saying, well, he doesn't know himself why they underperformed. Like, they're a much, much better team than that. That's what's so frustrating. And what is it? It's not a lack of effort. It's not, it's almost the opposite. Sometimes it's overzealous and, we've had an issue probably being not disciplined in the tackle. It's kind of haunts us a little bit. You could see it coming in different games, but it's not an actual, when I say not disciplined, I don't mean lazy tackles or sort of things. I mean, it's too much of sort of hands in, hands out. We're kind of overzealous and not timing it or whatever. There's just, you could see from the start of the game, there are fine margins, I think, between teams that are terrific and teams that are, good, as in the top 4 or 5 teams, say, in football. That, and even Eddie Brennan actually said it after the Laois Dublin game, where he was like, these lads had no lack, they've savage skill. They've savaged everything, he said, in terms of their actual skills of the game, but they just needed that belief that they were going to win it. And that's what's grown over the year. And that's what he kind of put it down to, that was the biggest change in Laois this year. It's the same kind of, say with Cavan at the start of the game, they won the throw up, then they gave the ball away, they kicked it in and it were swallowed up and it was conceded. I think they had another attack that the same thing happened. They pressed on the Tyrone kick out, the very first kick out, the Ronan McNamee, I think it was, kicked out, or somebody was in the full back position. There were 3 Cavan men around them. It was like, this is perfect. And then they fouled them and it was a free out. Now, the referee gave a lot of soft frees, I thought, against Cavan in the first half. But at the same time, that doesn't happen to Tyrone. There are things like that when they want to get around players like that. If they do that, they overturn you and it's a free in and it's a score. It's like we talked about in the Ulster final, where it was Conor Brady going through on the goal with the goal bearing down, and he had Usheen Pearson probably to give it off or go himself, fist it over the bar, we'll take a point. Tyrone, Donegal, they will not do that. That's in the back of the net. They're the little margins, I think, that just kind of are what we need to take us on to the next level.
Yeah. There's more than little margins on Saturday though. And I'm not being facetious about that. Like, you're 100% right in that. That's, and I have a point on the Clare game that I do think is a similar thing. That's the difference between the kind of Division 2 level and sort of the top teams. But I also think there was something...
Oh yeah, definitely. Sorry,
something lacking, and I hinted at it on Friday, and I was hoping I was wrong, and I was just worried about it because I did see the way they came out in the Ulster final, and I remember even Bernard Flynn talking about their warm up, you know, in the Ulster final, and it just seemed like it was a similar kind of lethargy. I don't know what it is. I don't know what a mental block of some kind that he needs to figure out this winter.
Yeah, like sorry, this analysis matter given is of the first 12 minutes. After 12 minutes, it was 2-2, and that's the only, like I said, and analyze that part of the game. The rest of it. Don't know what happened. There was some sort of...
A game can get away from you as well. It was like Tyrone going and got 6 points in a row in a game that wasn't a 6-point run.
Yeah.
You know, and it was over and whatever happened to Cavan then. Like,
remember the Jim McGuinness clip we played on Friday? The start of that, which we didn't put in, it was too long, was him talking about how, I think we conceded 1-6 against Donegal the year before, last year at the start of the Ulster Championship. And he was like, how does that happen without people standing up and saying, no more, this is not going on. Putting in a score.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking that as Tyrone were getting the scores again. Like, oh, this is thing. But I don't know what
it's
it
just
is.
It's happening. It's taking over.
And again, it's the same thing like you said about the Ulster final, where it's like, it's not work. You know, these people have put in so much effort to get this far. It's almost for them, you're like, do yourself justice.
Yeah.
And actually go out on your sword.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing I was going to say to you as well, Mark, I think Tyrone, we spoke about this before, they have a really good ability to just overrun teams. Like, they're athletic and more strong than a lot of teams. And one of the probably more encouraging things for, like, that was definitely the case for Cavan. They just weren't able to, like, physically compete a lot of the times. Matty Donnelly had something like 38 possessions, which is phenomenal. But he was playing at his ease. Like, there was no real physical confrontation. And I suppose the only positive is that, as well as Mickey Graham being in there, you've got somebody like Kieran Keogh, who did work with Tipperary before, the Tipperary Hurlers. Is now coming. This was his first year working with Cavan, and surely that base level that you're talking about there, you can't do that in a year, but maybe in 2 or 3 years you can build that up and try and compete. I'm not talking about compete in terms of tactically or technically, just purely on physical athletic basis.
Yeah.
That stuff that you just, like, and Tyrone of that ability, that's why they're such a good qualifier team. You can just literally overrun teams. They're just way more athletic and way more conditioned than a lot of teams, and that just stands them over and over again. And I think that's another thing that why I'm not still yet reluctant to buy into the Tyrone hype that seems to be drumming back up again, because they can do it like that. That's not going to work against Dublin or Donegal or Kerry or Mayo. That you're not going to overpower them. There needs to be that. The stuff that we talk about a lot in this podcast in terms of your systems and that stuff is where you win those games. Like, you can't. That's just a base level.
We said that on Friday about whether you were asking, did Cavan go defensive or attacking in the first half? It's like, well, you kind of go defensive to stay in it because they'll just completely destroy you if they get a run at you.
Yeah.
And we kind of went midway between both, I suppose, Dart and Mackie, but we just didn't have any.
It wasn't half much, really.
It's interesting you've preempted that now, but we were talking earlier, myself and Mark, like, I would have considered that the best performance of the championship so far. By any team, just in obviously been relentless, but just good. Another thing, actually, and I'd be just interested in know what you think of that. And the other thing I just wanted to mention about it was Niall Morgan's performance and how they use him. And I think we talked a lot about Brody, say, last year, and how, like, the fly keeper is a new thing and stuff. I think the way Tyrone have used that is perfecting it. It doesn't need the wild solo runs that are taking on men and stuff like that to do it. It's actually just being involved in the game. Yeah. I think he had 11 possessions in the first half, and the first half stats are the only ones we're talking about because that's when it was a match and in open play, and that's incredible for a goalkeeper. And that was just him being involved as a playmaker as well as an extra outlet and everything like that. And I think the way they use him is really, really brilliant.
You better appreciate that while it's here, because he'll be shackled to a goalpost next year when we get no back passes to the goalkeeper in.
Yeah. The other thing worth mentioning is like, the strength and depth they have is incredible. Like, you're looking at these players coming on, and it's like, oh, there's Michael McKernan nominated for an All-Star last year. There's who else? Come on, Pádraic Hampsey coming on. Jesus Christ, this is ridiculous. To have, like, the Tyrone second team would be a super red team, I think, at this stage.
Do you think it was the best performance of the year?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I still haven't seen. I can appreciate why you say that as well, and but I think that for too much of that, Tyrone at their ease, and that is down to. I'm sorry, Mark, but a lot of that is down to Cavan. Just not laying down a challenge, and I think they'll be much stiffer coming for Tyrone as well. Like the people, you know, this thing about they've got this counter-attacking game that was always there, and then they've got a supposed new dimension by having the direct ball into McShane. It's not a new dimension, it's one dimension. Like, you cut out McShane as Donegal did, and again they start to look slightly more clueless and stuff. And that was one of the problems, is that any time he was getting on the ball, like in the first half he was restricted, but even still when he got on the ball he was either setting off something or getting a score. Like, too many Tyrone players are playing at their ease at the weekend, and that's not down to systems or setups or any of that stuff. That's just down to how well conditioned they are. They were a level above, really, and that paid off. Claire,
we can't avoid it anymore.
We can't
avoid
it any longer.
Well, Meath, I think, is more so. Look, I thought that it was a phenomenally enjoyable game to watch. There was bouts of madness. Like, absolute, like...
It was great crack, though.
Both teams lost their mind for significant periods of the game, which I don't think I've ever seen before. It was like playing the PlayStation game, you know, when you're not really able to play it, and you're running backwards and sideways and everything.
I think it was started just about 29 minutes gone, 28 something, 29 minutes gone. Gallagher was fouled. He came out and won a great ball up in the far corner. Was fouled. Meade got a free. 3.5 minutes later, the ball went out of play when Clare scored a point. It was in play for 3 minutes, at least, if not 3.5, that it was just lads going up and down the field, giving it away. Gary Brennan had a massive shoulder off the ball in the middle of that to win a ball back for Clare. It was ridiculous.
There was a lot of... I thought, like, without getting into it again, I thought the referee did have a poor game outside of the black cards. I kind of thought that it kind of lost its way a little bit because of it a few times, just kind of random decisions against both teams that I just thought affected the flow of the game. But there was other things, like, you know, there was a few points where one, the goalkeeper volleying a bad sideways across the goal pass out for a sideline ball, which I don't think I've ever seen before.
Which Clare won back due to a terrible Meath free.
Yeah, and then Kenny O'Sullivan tried to take a short 14-yard free, which I don't think I've ever seen before, lobbing it over his man and into the hands of a Clare player. There was the goalkeeper getting shouldered off the line when he should have taken on the play. There was a lot of that kind of stuff. I think Clare will ultimately be disappointed to have not won the game, but actually would have been pretty lucky to get out of it as well, given the kind of goal chances that Meath had. And it looked like the Clare's full back line could be exposed at any time Meath actually ran at them. Both teams were poor at times and brilliant at other times, and it just made it for an entertaining game. I said on Friday, I think either way, whether they won or lost, Clare, this was probably Clare's level, and I think that they've done very, very well to get there, and that they are a solid Division 2 team. I'd like to see a few younger players coming through. It's an oldish team at this age.
Are they old, or do they just look extremely old?
No, they look older than they actually are. But they're older for
definitely,
a football team.
I can't remember a team that looked as old. I really can't. I think maybe
Gordon Kelly was definitely...
The Armagh team in the mid-2000s maybe looked fairly old. Yeah. But like...
The Dermot Marsden kind of...
Yeah,
Paddy
McKeever. Was it McKeever? Paddy McKeever. And then you had Kieran McKeever coming through, who was...
Always
bald,
old.
He was born very old. They all, like McGeaney, like none of them, you know, Francie Bellew. That was an old team now when you think about it. But
Tierney. But was he still in goal that time?
Yeah, Tierney was in goal at the start. And even when Hearty came in, he didn't look like he was no hot teen or anything coming through. But
we've lost the run of ourselves.
Yeah, just Clare, like Tubridy, Brennan, Kelly, they don't look like they were born yesterday anyway.
Sorry, go on.
The final thing I was going to ask you about Clare, like I think the narrow margins that make the difference between like the levels that teams we see was really evident in that game. In that, like in the first half, Clare stayed in touch by some outrageous long distance scoring, which is never a high percentage shot or that reliable a stream of scoring, and that duly dropped off. And after that even the we're speaking about athletes for Tyrone, Donald Keown, like the amount of ground he covers, the amount of time he just is so calm on the ball, and also he kind of just glides around the pitch. I don't really notice how often he's on the ball. That was the goal that might not have even been his goal. That was the same thing. He just kind of glided into that area, but nobody could stick with him because he's just constantly like perpetual motion, that it's really, really hard to stick a player like that. He's kind of he's a flyer, Mark. He's the archetypal halfback now. The players
was it Collins or I can't remember who it is. I don't think it was Collins. I think it was one of someone else in the halfback line for Clare deserves a special shout out for blocking that ball on the line.
Sean Collins then, trying to put his head.
No, it was Hartnett, wasn't it?
Was it?
I think so. Yeah, I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure it was Hartnett.
I think it definitely wasn't Collins because I saw someone tweeting Collins and I was like, no, that wasn't Collins.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Hartnett who was wearing number 7 who came in and.
Yeah. It was.
And then having blocked it and then jumped up
with
and
his did head, the, yeah.
So that was you have to admire the commitment. The only problem, like you mentioned, small margins, and let's talk about that goal, because this is no criticism of Jamie Malone at all. Like, he was phenomenal yesterday, and is like, you know, he might only be the second best Jamie playing at number 12 in the championship this year, but that's very unlucky for him, I would say.
Director of eyebrows as well.
He looks incredibly like John Conlon, I would say, actually, doesn't he? But anyway, I think he was phenomenal, and he got like those brilliant 4 points in the first half that, you know, you're not going to see many better scores. But on the one that he hit, the really the sky point that hit the post and went over, an absolute wonder score. Mead kicked the ball out to the cornerback on his side of the field. And he sprinted up the field. And if you watch the replay of that, Jamie doesn't put in a challenge.
Yeah.
It's not, and I'm not saying he has to win the challenge. I'm not saying he even really has to slow him down. But you have to put in more effort than the kind of half-hearted handout that I would have done when I was so tired playing under 16, you know? And what happened was Mead went down the field, Keoghan got it, there was a run on, it was a full-on counter-attack, Clare were never set, and it was a goal. And the game changed. Clare were well on top at that stage. And Mead were we got back to level by half-time, they responded really well, but I don't think Clare ever led again in the game. And that's pointing out one thing. It's massively unfair. But I think you probably, if you look for 20 things in that game, you'd probably find them, because that is the difference, really. At the top level, I can't see Tyrone or Dublin or any of these teams, Mayo, letting a cornerback get out like that when there is a man there without doing something. And maybe it's fouling.
Yeah, and
you know, we talked about that earlier in the show. Maybe if you're not able to make the tackle, if you're gassed after scoring a great score, it's probably a quick foul.
And now, it's a great point, because it goes back to what we talked about with Mayo last week. Like, you've got the game has evolved. It's not gotten worse, but it has definitely evolved. Where the trying to play a player like Malone in that way, where he's just going to be like a shoot the lights out, he's put your man on the back burner, isn't that like he needs to be effective on the other side of the ball. And that's what we talked about, what Wood Mayo did, and they actually hit the balance perfectly in letting Conan O'Connor play on the inside, bringing McLaughlin out to Forge where he does, and Fionn McDonagh, and even Cone, the way they implemented subs as well. I thought Tracy was really good when he came on, that kind of stuff. And the similar thing with a team like Clare, like the one-way impact isn't a thing anymore. Yeah. There needs to be, and I totally agree with you. Oftentimes, we talked about high press. The high press doesn't have to be, I'll win back possession or I'll stop my man here. It just has to be, I'll slow you down so that somebody else can drop back and filter in there. But to let him move kind of uninterrupted is just not an option.
Yeah,
anymore.
And I do want to clarify, actually, because I think... Malone actually worked hard yesterday, and he was back, even when he should have been black carded for a trip in his own box, you know what I mean? And he was working around, he wasn't the one way player, but I just mean in that instance it was like he didn't see the danger because the ball was so 150 yards from goal. But I don't think you can do that anymore, and I don't think you always bring up the James Horan stats, the obsession with the forward tackles and blocks and everything like that, and that's because he sees the danger. And it just, you know, and again, not picking a huge problem or a flaw or the reason that they lost or anything like that. I just think it's an instance as to why teams sometimes don't get to that next level.
Fine margin.
Special shout out just to the full back line for me, to Harnan. There's some serious performances there.
Harnan was brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, and then also the Clare team, Tuberty obviously, and Gary Brennan is unbelievable. I'd love to even just like go through games that he's been in where the amount of never mind the scores, the amount of dispossessions he gets
secures. Yeah,
yeah.
I'd say there are two teams that you'd be really proud of being a fan of yesterday. You know, I was really, really proud of being a Clare fan yesterday. I thought they just gave it every single thing they could, and you'd question a few little things like I'm saying, but I thought that, you know, that they just achieved their potential almost, you know, and I think that Mead probably did the same as well. Mead kept going, like, you know. Sure. So it was a good match, like.
Yeah, sure. Isn't that what it's all about? We're out of
it
time.
Is, yeah.
We're out of time.
I just want to formally apologise to Cork repeatedly. There's two things I need to apologise for. One, Cork.
Yeah. Forgot about them.
I was going to ask you for your one word on Cork, but you're going to jump in here anyway.
My one word is sorry, because I constantly are like, Cork, the handicap is whatever, and such a team are going to beat that handicap because Cork are shite. Basically, they're not. They're quite good at football. I also need to apologise to Colin McShane, because every week I keep calling him Paul McShane.
Didn't he stick to you last
Freudian, a Freudian slip.
We're going to talk about Cork more on our Friday show, but for now, Mick, give me your one word on Cork's performance yesterday.
Is this Cork footballers or hurlers?
The footballers.
Hurley.
Oh yeah, good word. Great word. Right, we'll be back on Friday to preview all the weekend's action and play against the handicap, but in the meantime, take it easy.